All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Matinee Talk. This is our 50th episode of Matinee Talk. Thank you for tuning in with us for that long, guys. I am your co-host, Julian Owens, and with me, as always,
Johnny Lightfoot.
And today, for our 50th episode, we're bringing a little special guest with us on today, Brett. Brett, how are you doing today, man?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for the invite today, guys.
No worries. We love to bring somebody back in who loves movies just as much as we do, so no worries. Now, guys, like I said, it's three of us, a three-man crew this time. We're going to talk about some movie news, not that much because of everything that's going on. And then we're going to talk about Dave Franco's directorial debut of The Rental. So before we get into that and any other things, Johnny, what is some movie news that we have discussed, that we've seen in the last week or two?
So we've got a lot of movies being delayed because of COVID, obviously. Inception indefinitely.
Yes.
Which
is Inception 2.0.
I refer to it as Inception, and it's Tenet. I'm sorry.
It's Inception 2.0.
You've been incepted.
Yeah, I got incepted. But Mulan. We got a lot of stuff delayed. The only one we're seeing, I guess, like regular release schedule right now is New Mutants.
And that's still coming out in
September,
right?
Yeah, September. So everything else, yeah, we're not seeing anything going on with those.
So I would guess now we're not getting an Oscars this year.
I think, so Oscars said early in February, no, not even February, they said in May, that basically, because of everything that's going on, that they're going to be doing, if you're doing a VOD release or internet release, then you're still eligible for an Oscars. But to your point, though, Brett, I don't think we're going to get an official Oscar season. If we are, then we need to see some Oscar films ASAP. I don't think we have seen any film this year that we would put in the Oscar category, in my opinion.
I mean, maybe Five Bloods. You know,
that's the only film, though. But
yeah, like, but beyond that, yeah,
I don't see anything else being in that. Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was interesting to see, and it might fall under their umbrella. But yeah, like Paramount essentially kind of saying like, hey, we're not releasing movies in 2020. No. Moving A Quiet Place 2 completely off the calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And what are they doing with Top Gun Maverick? Is that coming out summer of 2021? Right,
2021. Yep.
Okay, so that also got pushed from a Christmas release to summer 2021. All right. So,
and like, and we saw like Wes Anderson, his new film, The French Dispatch, is completely off the calendar now.
Gosh.
I see that so much.
And I feel like that one would be one that would be ripe for like
VOD
home
release. Yes.
VOD, like.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, like in a like September, October, November kind of range, a lot of people are probably going to be at that point hungry for content, and I think these major studios are just like, nope, 2020's done.
Yep.
We're not gonna risk it.
And to your point, so now like I said, Mulan is off the grid indefinitely. Tenet is off the grid indefinitely. What movie was supposed to come out December of 2021 that's now pushed all the way till December of 2020, now it's December of 2021. I forgot. There's some film that's supposed to be big.
We don't know anything about Mank.
I think that's what I was thinking about.
Well, so I mean, so certainly Netflix, that was going to be their Oscar push this year, yes, was Mank. And so it'll be certainly interesting to see if that comes out this, you know, essentially this holiday season, this award season. I honestly can't imagine that Netflix wants to waste that movie on a, you know, not getting Oscar nominations out of it. That's why you get in business with David Fincher and do a 1940s kind of movie with him. Like you want that recognition. You want to win Oscars. And I would assume too, Fincher's probably got something in his contract that says this movie has to show in
release.
It has to go to a theater.
And so I was going to say to that point though, like Netflix for the last, I want to say 2 years, with Roma, Irishman from last year, and now Mank this year, has been pushing to get into the Oscar awards and say, we got Best Picture films as well, too. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is that film that they need to say, let's put a stamp on it. Now, granted, do I think that the country will be open by holiday of this year? I don't know. But consoles think So I would say Netflix, you are, like you said, Johnny, The Five Bloods is already that film that I feel like Delroy Lindo will be getting a nomination from. Spike Lee will getting a nomination for Best Director and Best Screenplay. You need to keep the roles going because all the other studios are hinged on this idea of theaters being released.
Well, you know? It's either that or they need to open up what they allow for submission. Because, if you allowed like something like Bad Education, you could bring in something like, you know, Hugh Jackman for a support a lead actor. So, I mean, a lot of that really depends on if that happens. And if it doesn't, then it's just like, we're just going to roll it all together.
Can I ask you guys, too, a question about this Tenet delay? And I think the article might have been either in, like, Wall Street Journal or a Hollywood Reporter, I think, had really kind of the intense breakdown of it. But seeing that, like, potentially Warner Brothers could release Tenet in a country that the theaters are open, how do you feel about a Christopher Nolan film being out there in the kind of, you know, Twittersphere, kind of Reddit world, and in the States it's not open yet? That's crazy.
It's a crazy thought, and I was thinking about that the other day while listening to Snyder Cut on Collider and thinking about, like, what if a country like, you know, Turkey or, you know, Ukraine or wherever, like, oh, okay, like, our theaters are open because we're free and clear, and us, we're still, you know, well behind the curve and are trying to get back on foot, so...
I don't know.
I really don't know, because I feel like inevitably someone would put it out there, and I would feel the itch. I would get the itch hard to want to watch it.
So, to your point, though, another thing that I was thinking about was, I don't know if y'all saw, but, you know, speaking of which, just want to say this on Mandate Talk. I saw Train to Busan for the very first time, like, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Phenomenal film. And its sequel, or it's, like, how I feel about Cloverfield, its sequel in its universe, Peninsula, came out for South Korea, and it got $26 million with all of the restrictions that they have in South Korea. So, I wouldn't be surprised if Warner Brothers does that with Tenet. Now, granted, would I feel some type of way that it's out in South Korea, Turkey, you got, like, other countries that are basically, loosening their restrictions in terms of being reopening? Sure, I would, but at least for me, I would feel like Warner Brothers is getting their money's worth going and releasing it to other countries until America, who's supposed to be the idea of learning how to reopen a country, gets his crap together. So, I mean, I would feel some type of way Tenet is not being seen here. But nonetheless, until we get our crap together, I'm not too mad about that.
To that, I'd say I've always wanted to take, like, a European trip to, like, go see a Champions League match in, like, a great, you know, European city like Barcelona or something. But the thought of, like, ooh, I could do a European trip to go see Tenet, like, that's just crazy. But, like,
well, if they would even let you in, assuming it's a country that would let you in. Yeah, right. Exactly. That's what's unrestricted. Because, I mean, apparently, like, right now, even us, like, because we're here in Austin, Texas, apparently we can't even go to, like, New Jersey, New York,
we gotta be Connecticut. In 2 week quarantine.
We gotta be in quarantine because, we're all infected. We're in
Texas, of course, but. And that's why it's just going to be pretty interesting to see what this movie studios do in the next couple of months. Because as we talked about on Mandate Talk before, I don't know if, Brad, if you listen, studios are hurting not having content out right now. And at the same token, Peacock has now just been released. HBO Max is now out. Disney Plus is now out. These major tentpole studios need their tentpole films out. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to navigate throughout the rest of the year. Will you take a hit for these financial troubles throughout this year just because we don't know how we're going to reopen? Or will you literally give in and make some of your films come into VOD? We don't know.
No, yeah. I think that gets into something that has been just boggling my mind, which is I really thought with like the, you know, with, you know, the Comic-Con from home and New Mutants having a panel there, like I was for sure, I was like, oh, they're just going to throw New Mutants up on one of our VOD services, yeah, like in the next week or two.
Yeah, that's a great segue into New Mutants. They released a clip of, I guess, the first few minutes of their film, and I think we've all watched it. Yeah, we've all watched it. So, I mean, what did you guys think? Because I thought it looked pretty VOD to me.
I'm like,
their trailer looked okay, but the VO, like this little clip from the beginning, it looked a little choppy.
Go ahead, Brett. I'm gonna let you go because I have thoughts. I have some thoughts.
I'll just say, like, I mean, I think it's gonna certainly be weird when we have Maisie Williams and what's the other lead?
Anya Taylor-Joy
promoting this film, yeah. And you're like, oh, you look like 4 years older than you did at that mm-hmm. time. Like you yep. legitimately look like a different
exactly.
human.
Exactly. Yes.
No, I would just like I said, echo what I said, which is like I thought it would have been a really amazing move by them to just release it on Disney Plus. Like I thought it would have been a great synergy. It would have drove people to the platform, and instead, like, to hear then Josh Boone kind of be like, oh, I think we're gonna do like, you know, New Mutants 2 and 3, or like do spinoffs. God. I was just like,
yes. You guys haven't. This was supposed to come out like 3 years ago,
2017, late 2017, early 2018, and we still do not have a film release.
What world are we living in that you think you're getting like sequels on a movie that you can't even get released at this point?
So to your point, Brett, thank you for bringing that up. My biggest issue with the footage, Johnny mm-hmm. and Brett, is the fact that the CGI doesn't look finished. And to your point, this film has been filmed, in 2016, right? It's been filmed in 2016, and you still look like you're in the beginning stages of your CGI. Mm. No. And for you to say, this is like the turning point of still being in the X-Men universe and the universe at 20th Century Fox, now considered 20th Century Studios, has been going, it's almost like a slap in the face. At this point, like you said, I wouldn't put it on Disney Plus because Disney wants to keep that the more family-friendly kind of part. But since you have most shares in Hulu, put it on Hulu.
Put it on Hulu. Because it's supposed to, like, basically get into this genre we haven't seen, which is, like, this superhero horror.
Yes.
And we haven't seen that. And it's like, okay, cool. This is something new. And you still can't put this shit out.
And it's like Disney... I feel like at this point, Disney doesn't know what it wants to do with the New Mutants just because of how terrible Dark Phoenix came out to be, you know? Dark Phoenix, as much as we want to say, I feel like it's worse than X-Men The Last Stand. I honestly do think it's worse, not worse than Origins Wolverine, which was a travesty on its own, but it was as bad as that, and they're just worried that the New Mutants will be as bad as that. From what I've seen from this new trailer that you put at Comic-Con at home that I watched on IGN, I don't think it's terrible, but it's average. And just put it on Hulu for me to watch. I felt like the CGI on Palm Springs was average, but I was blown away from the story. If the story and the performances are good enough, the movie will stand on its own. And I feel
I think Palm Springs, like, that would have ripped at a theater. Like, I totally would have done a date night at that. Like, even if I had seen it prior, I would have been like, I'm going to go take you again. I'm going to go, we're going to go watch this, even though I've already seen it. Like, the New Mutants,
it looks okay.
Okay. Yeah.
It looks absolutely okay. And speaking of things that look okay, last thing from movie news, we got 19 seconds of the Zack Snyder's Justice League Snyder cut.
Yep.
And it's basically what we saw in a trailer, where it's basically Alfred is working on a very old vintage car, and instead of it just being the regular Superman that we see at the end of the movie, or towards the end of the movie in Justice League, it's Black Superman coming in and talking, and he says, "Oh, you must be Alfred." Then it cuts. Okay.
Yep. Okay. I mean,
That is literally what I think about the whole Snyder Cut experience, which is okay.
So, thank you. So, all right, Johnny and I have talked about this a couple of episodes previous on Matinee Talk. So, Brett, please at least give me your thoughts on how do you feel about the Zack Snyder's Justice League cut.
Ah, man. I hope there's no Snyder Cut people that want to like dox or destroy your podcast, but I think this is ridiculous.
Yep.
I think it's really like, you know, I think in the mid to late aughts, there was like this run where like Ridley Scott kept making movies and like kept having director's cuts on all of them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it was weird at that time, because like Ridley Scott's a respected filmmaker, has made classics, but like the director's cut like changed the movie and you're like, okay, I'm like accepting this. And like Ridley Scott's, you know, not making huge movies,
no,
you know, at the scale that Zack Snyder is. And for me, there's this weird like ownership, or like not ownership, but like
the stereotype that he makes cuts of his films and the studios
well,
don't want
well
to
like
do.
That he's like deserving of this director's cut. That's I think what I'm saying. I think okay. That is well,
it's
weird
like
to
yeah
me.
It's like and we've talked about it, it's like who are the directors that actually deserve the right to have a director's cut?
And I completely agree with that. I don't feel like...
And this is just I don't my think opinion. Zack Snyder's earned that right.
No. Two out of his 6 films, I would say deserves a Zack Snyder cut. And that's his first two films he has ever made, Dawn of the Dead and 300. Mm-hmm. I do not think Watchmen deserved a director's cut. In my personal opinion, as much as I love the Watchmen comic book, the graphic novels, I feel like that was your vision, and Warner Brothers gave you the money to make that vision, and for you to literally make the theatrical cut that you made was decent on its own, but the director's cut added an hour almost, and I was just okay.
Yeah, I mean the Watchmen ultimate cut is it's fine.
Yes,
it's good. Like mm-hmm. it's a good watch if you're willing to sit there for 4 hours, but I can't say that I've ever had the instance to where I've been like, yeah,
sorry,
I'm just gonna tell, yeah, I'm just gonna take 4 hours out of my day and
so
do the ultimate cut.
Hot take. So again, sorry, Snyder fans. I rather watch the motion graphic that's 4 hours long.
There it is.
Watch the ultimate cut of Watchmen.
Well, like,
just say,
I'll add to the F you to the Snyder Cut people. My worst fear then has come true with this, which is like now all of a sudden, like, we're like, oh, David Ayer deserves his
everybody
cut. And I'm just like,
I don't want to see another.
I don't care. I don't care. Like, again, like, cool, David Ayer, you got to make a $200 million film, but like, that's not yours, man. That's Warner Brothers
nope.
property. Like
you haven't earned like, that right.
Like
there are a very handful directors who have
after
earned
Bright,
that.
You do not have a right to your last cut. After Bright, you don't. I'm sorry.
And
absolutely not.
Like I'll say like probably like I bet, you know, if the Ayer cut comes to fruition, I bet it's gonna be better than Suicide Squad, and I'm sure the Snyder cut's gonna be better than the Justice League we got, but like, do we need it and do we care?
No.
No.
And I was gonna say one thing I will say about this though, and like I said on the previous episodes but previously, this Justice League Snyder cut will not do anything for the DCEU. If it was going to do something to help navigate the stories within the DCEU, even for Flashpoint Paradox, cool. But it's not. The president of DCEU has already said this will not help in continuation of the worlds that we are trying to build within the DCEU. So what's the point? You're literally, and again, I'm not trying to harp on the same tune we did a couple of episodes ago. You're just giving the fans what they want just because they're crying about it, you know? And I just feel like how we felt with Sonic, even though that was somewhat justified because whatever the hell we got with the first trailer of Sonic was disaster. And what we got with this Sonic movie was way more entertaining. I don't feel like giving a director a director's cut just because the fans are asking for it gives them justice to give one. Like, I don't care to see Batman vs. Superman for an extra 40 minutes where it explains why Luthor was trying to blackmail Superman. The movie's still mediocre regardless of that extra 30, 20 minutes, but sure, let's give Zack Snyder a Snyder cut.
Yeah, complete agreement with you on that. It's, yeah, I just, with Zack's, like, I know that Warner Brothers, like, is very much this, like, studio that, like, yeah, like, and we see it with Tenet and Christopher Nolan, where you just, you want to give this filmmaker so much leash and just be like, kind of, you know, do what you do and we're going to back you 100%. But, like, at this point, we're so many years away from it, like, who cares anymore? Like, it's not going to, it's, you know, I think we're going to get, like, a major shift in this DCEU with Flashpoint. Like, I literally think that, like, I don't, no, I'll take that back, but I'll just say, like, you know, I wonder if Zack Snyder looks at Aquaman and Aquaman making, you know, $1.5 billion and is just like, I cast that guy. Oh, do you guys remember that I cast that guy?
Yes.
And, yeah. And, you know, of course there's the there's like that embed of Snyder fans that just are cutthroat and want his vision on the screen. But, you know, at what point do you just say it doesn't matter anymore?
Yep.
I agree.
Nope. 100%.
That's why I'm at this point now where I'm like, you know what? We can ask for a Snyder cut with a movie that's been done 4 years ago when it comes out in the release. It could be 4 years ago, and we can give them that. But what is it going to do for the film, the universe, you know? So to your point, I'm at this point, cool. I'll watch it just because I just want to see what his vision would be, but I know for sure it's not going to go anywhere.
We're going to watch it because AT&T says we should watch it.
Exactly. We're all AT&T subscribers.
And fortunately, AT&T TV and HBO Max subscriber, yes, you're talking to me.
Yep.
So, yep. All right. Anything closing remarks before we get into the rental, gentlemen?
No. So, the main topic is the rental.
So, before we get into that, we do have a word from our sponsor. So, we're going to get to that real quick, and then we'll get into the rental. And we're back. So, as you can tell, we have a guest. Like I said, we have Brett, Johnny and I. And actually, Brett, we all have watched the film, The Rental. It is the directorial debut of Dave Franco. If you keep calling him James Franco's little brother, then I feel like you're doing a disservice to what Dave Franco has brought to the film business. This film stars four people. We won't name their names yet. But two couples going into an Airbnb in a secluded place just to get away from the weekend. But they realize that there's a peeping Tom around, which they are trying to learn and trying to figure out with. That is all we're going to say in the non-spoiler talk of this part of the film. Guys, initial thoughts. I have to know.
So, initially, I thought it was a very slow build-up. I thought Alison Brie and, I mean, Brett knows this, like, I heart Dan Stevens. I think he is gold, but he just doesn't get enough work. But no. I really liked the build up. I did think it, like I said, it was very slow burn. I think that, you know, the jump scares and the, like, oh my gosh, look, there's a camera here. Like, we got a lot of that in the trailer, and I think the trailer rips, but I just think that there could have been something else there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
So I'm coming to the rental from an interesting POV here. Okay. I work in the travel industry. When you say, like, he rented an Airbnb, I'm like, well, the movie doesn't say he rented an Airbnb. It very well could be a Vrbo. I'm in that industry, and I think it's a interesting industry to then, impugn a horror film into.
And
when I say that, it's just that we're in a society right now where we don't trust anybody. No. We can hardly trust anybody to go to a grocery store and put on a mask. But there's this cottage industry that's like, hey, here's my home. Come into it and do whatever you want. And that's, for me, that's a great entry point into digging into society and really starting to like figure out what's important to some people.
Yes.
I'll agree with Johnny. Like, I think this is a certain slow burn, certainly a slow burn film. And I think when you watch that trailer, you're like, oh, I'm gonna get some like hijinks.
There's some in the trailer. You're getting some action, and like you don't really get any of that until towards the end.
Right. It's definitely like a third act film. But I think the thing that's for me interesting is that I was captivated for the first two acts of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what Dave Franco is able to do, and you know, might be because of his name, but he has four actors in there that are interesting, are captivating. Yes. Like you can't take your eyes off of them. And that certainly helps. And getting the backstory not getting those backstories of those characters, essentially just you're supposed to kind of do your own work, kind of figure out what's going on in terms of the characters' backstories kind of up until the kind of middle of that second act before they really start to lay the cards on the table. I think it is fun. Like, I think the movie does a really great job within the first couple of scenes. I'm like, oh, I get what's going on here. And I can't wait for this house of cards to just crumble down.
Absolutely.
And it's one of those things where like, I'm like, oh, well this couldn't even be a horror movie. This could just be like a mumblecore drama. And I'm going to be interested to see what two couples, one of them being brothers, how they interact on a vacation. Like, I think vacations are always fraught with like anxiety or like, how do we travel with another couple, or kind of, you know, just those kind of like, you know, how do we do vacation? Like that's always tough. Like it's not always like sunshine and rainbows when you go on vacation with a loved one. There's a lot of like tension that can be had there of like what we're going to do each night and, you know, how that's going to shake out.
Yeah. No, there's definitely a lot of that there. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of stuff there with the prior relationships that you're trying to learn, and you're figuring out everything involved. And I think that, you know, going into it and learning more about them and seeing what's going to unfold. spoilers upcoming. I think a lot of that comes into play. So
yes,
what were your initial thoughts,
so
Julian?
For me, like I said, I've watched it twice in the last 48
hours. Okay.
For me, I thought this was a really great way of just differentiating yourself from most typical home invasion films.
Mm-hmm.
For me, backstory, I've watched a decent hand of them, like about 30, 40 of home invasion films that I would say I enjoyed. Would I say about half of them weren't, I would say, typical, or okay, they hit tropes from horror films or slasher films that I'm just like, okay, we can get over with it. Sure. And I feel like Dave Franco hits those tropes, but does something a little bit different with this, he considers it soon to be franchise, but we'll see. And we'll talk about that in the spoiler talk. Anyways, what he does with this film is something that I really haven't seen in a modern day horror invasion in just a pretty brief time. I would say it kind of reminds me of a breath of fresh air, like how Your Next was and Don't Breathe was in these recent years. And you're sitting there, wow, this is something different. And for you guys, like you said, it was something in terms of the tension building for me. That's from the first scene, I was like, this is something that's going to probably pick up a little bit, and it's just going to start grinding gears throughout the end of the film. And what it did, it just, how I feel about with Conjuring, how we talked about all on our podcast for the last 2 years, Johnny, is it just grinds the gears and it builds the tension up, builds it up to the point where it's a break and release by the end of the film, and you're just sitting there wondering how they're navigating this while there's a peeping Tom walking around their walls, you know? And it was just such a great, great idea. And to your point, Brett, I'm the kind of person that, like you said, I don't trust anybody that's a foot ahead of me, you know? There's very few people that I enjoy or I let in my space, Johnny and you being one of them, in terms of like just having conversations and putting yourself in a situation where you're open arms with somebody who gives you their home and saying, you know, spend time in my home. And for 1 second to just think, they can just open the doors when they feel like it. They can literally have access to me in the most uncomfortable space that I feel like is personal to me, you know?
Yeah, and for them to terrifying.
That, yeah, and for them to change that and flip that on its head was something that I wish most people would do in their films. And Dave Franco, I think, as his directorial debut, did a damn good job of that. Like, absolute good job.
No, very much so. And I know Brett definitely agrees with me when it comes to, like, Dan Stevens being, like, Dan Stevens is the man. And
why isn't he in more movies?
Yeah, like this guy needs more work. And
Dan Stevens, if you're listening, I could be your agent, and I will get you jobs, man. Let's go.
Give him better roles, please. If y'all are listening, just give him better roles. Like, he did phenomenal in the Eurovision competition film.
Oh, man. Like, best part of Eurovision.
Right. Shining Star. It's weird. Like him and Beauty and the Beast, you're just like, oh, dude, like, what are you doing here? Like, I'm sure the money is really nice. Like, I'm sure the Mouse House pays well, but like, give me some Dan Stevens, the guest, like some that. Juice. Like, he's like
the guest.
And I mean, certainly, you know, there's the Downton Abbey fans out there that are just like, yeah, like, why isn't one of our favorite actors from the early seasons of Downton Abbey not the biggest movie star in the world? Like, it's weird.
Yeah. No, it definitely is. And yeah, it's one of the things I wondered watching this, where I'm like, I hate this guy, but at the same time,
he's captivating.
Like, I like him. And like him as a character.
You want to see the best for him, which I think is so important.
Even after what happens, you're still like, I'm rooting for you, Dan.
Yes.
And I feel like you're an asshole of a brother. But I'm rooting for you to come out of
here. He's a shitty human. And I think you can get that within the first 10 minutes of the movie. You're like, oh, this guy's a dick. Like, this guy is like, the movie's not telling me yet, but like, I get it. Like,
I feel like we'll talk about this in spoiler version, but I feel like even in the first 15 minutes, they told you who Charlie was and they gave you already how he feels about people in this film. And I clung onto that watching it the second time and said, that's where I should have picked up in the beginning from the very first time. So, yeah, I agree with you. Like, they kind of gave you an idea who he was in the beginning and then ran with it. And it was phenomenal.
No, 100%.
Now, how did you feel about, like, Alison Brie, Sheila Van? So, go ahead.
Alison Brie. So I watched this with my girlfriend, and we were watching it, and I turned to her like at one point, and I was just like, oh God, another like good girl in a horror movie. Like, I was like, I know what's going to happen to you. With that, I think we should probably transition to some spoiler talk, because
I feel like the rest of this movie you have to discuss.
I don't think I can say anything more about Alison Brie's character without spoiling stuff. So
guys, as per usual, this is now the spoiler portion of the podcast. If you have not seen The Rental, please pause this podcast, go watch it, and come back to it. Otherwise, if you want to hear spoilers, here you go.
But yeah. So, Alison Brie's character, she is the only, and I say good human in this, with a heavy heart, because she's still into drugs and stuff that I don't agree with. But, she's overall, like, a good person, which is what makes Dan Stevens' character Charlie even harder to be like, ah, Dan, I love you, but I don't.
And to your point, like, watching her in the beginning of the film helping navigate Dan's feelings, or Charlie's feelings, Charlie and Alison Brie as Michelle in the film. Michelle's trying to help navigate Charlie's feelings because Mina, who is Shelley Van, and Jeremy Allen White, who is Josh, who is his brother. Like, Charlie, you can tell, does not like his brother in a sense, because his brother has been in and out of trouble. He has his girlfriend, who is now his business partner, who's really up in arms. She's a woman that's getting it going. She's got everything up on her shoulders. And you could tell, like I said, from the second showing, Charlie has that respect slash love for her that's a little bit more than a business partnership. And he's like, I think my brother's a dick. He doesn't know if he has a good woman with him, and I think she's too good for him and stuff like that. And I'm like, why would you say that with your wife in bed with you?
Exactly.
Why would you say something like that? Come on, Dan. I love you better than this. You're better than that. And for him to go and for Dave to use that as a tipping point and help navigate throughout the entire vacation.
Which leads to the tension, which is fantastic. Yes. Like, what Dave Franco does so fantastic in this intake is basically taking these what should be mundane characters. You take, you know, this one woman who works with this guy who is also married, and then she happens to be, you know, significant other of the brother, and yeah, like them being together and them going on this basically couples retreat, and you introduce what's his name? Stan? I don't know.
Oh, Taylor? You're talking about
Taylor.
Taylor.
Yeah. You introduce Taylor, and you introduce him as this creepy character, and it's just really weird and uncomfortable, and you introduce him, and yeah, you basically open up everybody's frailties.
And you give everybody a different dynamic. I'm sorry, you can go ahead, Brad, if you wanted to. Okay. So, like, what I loved about it is, like I said, in the first 15 minutes, you get everybody's dynamic. Charlie doesn't like Josh because he's dealing with his Mina, and he feels some type of way about Mina. Josh is trying to be this boyfriend that Mina needs or wants or has this idea of to be. Michelle is just going with the flow and just wants to
Which, keep everybody she's the only happy. Level-headed person through the whole thing.
Entire movie!
And I kind of feel like Alison Brie's talents were wasted a little bit?
Just a little bit.
I would say, of course they're wasted. She has the least to do, and she's doing a favor here.
And it's crazy that, like, I like leaned over to my girlfriend, and I was like, and we're in spoilers now, but I leaned over, and I was like, oh, she's the one, like, morally sane person. Like, she's gonna die first.
And I hate to say it, she was, but we're not going to get there yet. We won't get there yet. Go ahead, Brent.
I would just say, like, for me, a couple of takeaways, like, for me, like, Sheila Vand.
Yeah, Sheila Vand.
Whoa. I did not know this actress.
At all.
She's got a legit IMDb that, like, I'm like, oh, fuck, I've clearly just been missing stuff, but I think what's important in films like these is, like, being able to latch onto somebody and just, like, being able to, like, be like, cool, I'm gonna follow you, which you watch the movie, and I don't know about you guys, but, like, Dan Stevens is on screen within, like, the first 3 minutes, and I'm like, oh, cool, like, Dan Stevens, I know that guy, he's solid, like, I'm gonna latch onto him. And then, too, like, not seeing him initially as, like, too much of an asshole, I'm like, oh, that's my hero, like, cool.
See, I had the exact same opposite reaction. Okay. The first time watching it, I was watching him, and I was like, okay, he seems cool, but he's not the main protagonist. I feel like with most typical home invasion or slasher films, there's a woman who's gonna be the protagonist, so I thought it was Mina, Sheila Van. Mm-hmm. And so listening to him and then listening how Sheila's trying to navigate, you know, the potential racism that was going on with this role, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. was something I was like, okay, I could see them diving into something a little bit deeper with this, or, you know, dealing with the peeping Tom that might be in this film. So I latched on to her. Mm-hmm. Then I latched on to Dan after the fact. Granted, did I like Dan after, I mean, in the beginning? No, but I still latched on to him and those two being at least the final survivors of this film, you know? And so I was in the idea of like, okay, I'm a root for Sheila because just because she's the up and coming one, she's the outsider of this whole family dynamic and she's just trying to make a living or trying to make a better idea of what a family could be with her boyfriend, you know? So I don't know. There's many different people you could take on. Like, who I started with, Courtney, she thought Michelle was going to be the shot brightest shining star. And I'm like,
No, you know, exactly. Like, yeah, from the get-go, I was like, oh, no. Yeah. Allison Brie, I'm sorry. Like, from the trailer, I was like, oh, you're the co-lead. And then I was like, an hour into the movie, and I was like, oh no.
You're like, you're the first girl.
Yeah.
You're the most morally sane one, and you're the first to go.
You're on ecstasy, and yet, I'm pretty sure you're going to be the first to go.
And speaking on that, I don't know if you guys felt the same way. I felt like this film kind of, again, like I said, led to some stereotypes. I felt like Taylor, they were going to do this whole thing with like a whodunit kind of situation where Taylor is the villain, but you're kind of, they're trying to shut a reason why he's not. And then what comes to happen at the the latter end of the second act where Taylor's like, I don't know what the fuck this is on your shower head. I don't know that's a fucking camera, but call the cops. Call them and tell them what's going on.
My favorite scene of the movie.
Yes. And Josh beats the living shit out of Taylor, but doesn't kill him, but beats the living shit out of him. And then the dude who is pulling the strings is like, all right, Taylor, I'm killing you out of the game. You're out of the game now. And I'm like, wait, whoa.
That's the, we bring in the Verbo expert on that. That guy, I was like the more they explained him being, you know, going out there and having these properties and doing this stuff, I was like, oh, that's like a really interesting premise, but like, what do you...
So for me, like, I see the trailer, I see the cast list, I see Toby Huss, right?
Yeah, Toby Huss, that's Taylor.
Huge fan. He was in one of my favorite shows of the last 10 years, Halt and Catch Fire. But this is an actor that, like, every time he's in a movie, he's one of the actors that I'm just like, cool, I'm following you, I can't wait to watch you.
Yeah.
So I see the cast list for this Dave Franco movie before watching it, and then I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh my God, they're about to make Toby Huss, like, the heavy, like, of a horror film.
Yes.
And I was just getting those vibes, and I was like, certainly, like, into it too.
He got the creepy, like, laugh, and, it's, like... the sit back, like, yeah, like laugh creepy.
It's that sit back, like, I'm comfortable being a racist. Like,
yes, absolutely.
Like you want to call me on it? Cool. But I'm
okay with it.
I'm still going to be a racist. Okay. Like,
I'm still going to operate the way I do.
Yeah, like you're here. I'm going to be respectful to your face, but like, I still hate you. And like, it's a vibe that I was like, cool. Like, I'm into this. Like, I'm like, cool, like, this is about to be, like, a heavy that I'm like...
a racist heavy that I'm down to see how this plays out. Exactly. Absolutely.
Yes. And then it was super weird then in that third act where...
You killed him.
Well, and it's not even the kill, but it's the way that Toby Huss plays that scene where Sheila Vand is, like, coming at him like you did this, like I'm in your face, like what the fuck.
Yeah.
And his like sense of just like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Like,
what the fuck are you like, talking about?
Are you against us? Are you crazy? Are you pretending? Like, what is this? And then once he's gone, you're like,
I love his reaction that he's just like, let's call the cops. Let's get the cops here.
Yeah, I'll call him right now.
And she's like, I don't know what to call him. And I'm like, he's doing exactly what you wanted him to do. And I'm like, so either he's A, in on it, and he has the cops involved, or B, he literally does not know what the hell is going on.
I really thought it was this distant, off brother that we like didn't hear about. I thought that was our guy. Yeah,
exactly.
And he's I was like, oh, okay, so it's like a brother thing, and I bet these brothers are gonna get into it.
But then it's just some random guy that and you don't know.
And it, and again, it,
and
it
gets, you don't know. It's like he's setting up this story.
Which I love. Like, I love the sense that, like, you don't know that you're watching essentially the origin story of a serialized killer heavy. Like, you that's always the fun thing with, like, one of my favorite home invasion films, like The Collector and The Collection. You watch The Collector and you're like, oh, okay, this is just, like, a fun, like, spin on Home Alone or something. And eventually you're like, oh, this is a really bad guy. Oh, and then I get a sequel where, like, I get to really see him, like, at his, like, apex. And this is where, like, I'm watching this movie and being in the industry, I'm like, oh, God, renting a vacation rental, dealing with a racist homeowner, that's going to suck enough. But then dealing with somebody that, like, rented this home before, scouted it, installed cameras, knows what the fuck they're doing, and then also just really wants to fuck with you. And I think that's what's really great about this film is that, like, establishing the slasher heavy for the future is fun and all, but, like, I think this masterstroke from Dave Franco is working with one of his collaborators, Joe Swanberg, and them looking at this project and being like, no, the fun thing isn't that these are... that we're creating a slasher. The fun thing is, like, this interpersonal kind of back and forth with the couples or what we can do there. Like, that's where our movie
is. That's where it's so horrible. Mm-hmm. Where you start thinking about, like, oh, man, this is my, you know, significant other. This is my brother. And I'm, you know, messing with that sort of thing. And
how the tears were even turning just from their, like, little conversations. So, like, for instance, one of the biggest main conflicts or the biggest thing that starts the incident is the fact that, you know, Dan Stevens and Sheila Van, basically the work partners, go have sex after being on a trip on LSD. And you can tell.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, no, like, they can never know about this. Like, this is the last time.
And they find out while basically
Man, eventually, like, you're gonna let the other person know.
And you, well, you, well,
or, me, I, well like you I was like, oh, well, like, whoever this homeowner stalker person is, like, they're gonna let them know.
So I was just gonna say, like, with the camera in there, I was like, oh, wow, Taylor is either gonna let them get in so much trouble, or he's gonna let them let the cops out, or let the cat out of the bag themselves. But then, what I loved about it was, like, Josh threw a curveball in front of Michelle, saying, "Oh yeah, well, you know, by the way, you aren't the first girl that my brother's done this to. You know, there was a girl previously that this happened to." Oh man! To. And I'm like, no,
tough look for my guy.
Epic relationship scenes, like. I know Johnny just talked about watching this with his girlfriend, but, like, I remember I was watching that scene and just being like, oh, fuck, I'm kind of okay with not watching this with a significant other right now because
I was like, oh, shit.
And that's, like, I want to say that's the Joe Schwamberg of this movie. Like, if you guys are listeners or aren't aware of it, like, this is a very, like, mumblecore filmmaker. He makes this show on Netflix called Easy. That's just, it's very, like, you know, interpersonal relationships. There's never, like, big, like, rising action in his films. Like,
so much inner conflict between the characters that gives it, it's not justice, not jumps, but drama within the characters themselves.
Exactly.
And it was so well done in this film. Like, I agree with you, Brett.
Exactly. Like, this was a guy, like, in his early 20s was just making, you know, I'll say it's, like, fucking shitty mumblecore films. And, like, he got into his middle to late 30s, and I think he might be in his early 40s now, but like, he's just, he puts out a lot of content. Mm-hmm. People like collaborating with him, and it's always like just great interpersonal drama. Like, this is a guy that, like, quote unquote, you know, helped find Greta Gerwig her voice. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
And I think he does the same here with Dave Franco. Like, I think without Joe Swanberg there, like, Dave Franco's just making a commonplace horror movie, and instead, like, it's imbued with this just really great character drama. Like I was trying to sell this film to like friends or coworkers, and you know, you want to be like, oh, this is a really fun, you know, horror slasher film, and you know, I'm in the industry of vacation rentals, so talking to my coworkers about it, I'm like, oh, this is, you know, this is us, like, this is, you know, a fun film to watch, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, it's not like a slasher.
It's not action slasher.
Yeah,
or anything.
Yeah,
like that.
It's very slow, and it's so character first, and that's what's, I think, you know, I think this could have been like a 2-star film. You could have seen this as like boring or mundane or something, but because you care about the characters, because it's not flashy, like it just lets the story happen, it elevates it a little bit.
And to your point, and that's why I felt like a lot of the decisions that the characters made throughout this film, you could see is justified. And just to give a little context, after watching it a second time, I started reading and listening to Dave Franco's like interviews about this film. And one of the things I wanted to ask, and somebody asked, was, you know, how did you do this really well with the date of technology that we have now? And he said the idea was, like what Swanberg said, was put them in a conflict where most of this shit could be done or could be solved if you simply take up the phone. Like, literally, all that could have been solved if Michelle would have called the cops, or if anybody would have just called the cops, this whole situation could have been avoided. But because of the internal conflicts within the characters themselves, that prohibited them from doing that. Mm. And that's why they didn't. For, like I said, we talked about how they both had sex, and they found out that there was cameras in there. Now they're trying to hide it from their significant others. They don't want to call the cops on, like, Taylor to say, hey, he has footage of us having sex, and we don't want to show our significant others. It's like, we got to find a way to let Taylor get rid of that footage without spoiling ourselves to the significant others, and it just starts unraveling. And the heavy, which I still don't know what his name is, and which is the best part of this film.
He's just the heavy.
He's just the heavy killing people. He's like, oh, you don't want to show? Oh,
cool. Kill yourself.
So here we go. Y'all are out there trying
You got knocked off. You got knocked off. And you got knocked off.
Right. Oh, you want to play and not show somebody? All right, I'm playing footage up on the upstairs stairs. Michelle, do you want to go look at that real quick? Yeah, go see what's up there. Why are the showers running? And Michelle goes and sees that footage. And she's so hurt after she just literally
let it happen, and gone,
gets killed off. Boyfriend, husband wants to go see what's happening, gets killed off. And then the most beautiful way of doing it, you let the brother's phone, the brother that you just killed, you go on his phone, start sending all of the footage. And I was like, that is so calculating and it's so smart. And you start waxing them off because of their own transgressions between each other. Beautiful way of killing them. Like, absolute way. And sorry, yeah, spoiler alert. Technically, nobody survives, depending on how you call Mina. I think Mina's dead.
Mina's dead. She fell off a cliff. Let's be honest. She fell off a cliff.
Mina ain't dead.
Mina's dead.
You got it. Horror movie 101. You have to show the body. Right. You have to show the body.
I agree with you, Brett.
He looked, though.
That's what I was going to say, Brett. I have to agree with, he agreed with you with the tropes.
The tropes say she's alive.
But for him to go look, all right, and sorry we're spoiling the ending if you haven't seen it. Again, we told you in the spoiler part. if, like you said, for most tropes, like I felt with Stranger Things, if you don't see a body, they're not dead. But he looked, packed up, got everything he needed, then moved to a whole nother location at the end of the film and redid everything. I felt like, unfortunately, and Dave Franco said in an interview, he said, that's up to your interpretation, but I feel like she died. She her leg was hurting. She is still trying to recover, and it's foggy. She can't see anything. You fall in a drop like 30. It had to be 30 feet minimum.
At least.
She's gone. I'm sorry.
Cliffside.
Cliffside of rivers with, I mean, in the ocean with rocks.
And I mean, to be honest, like, going back to, like, earlier in the movie, like, they kind of, spoiler, they showed the cliffs and were commenting on how high they were and, like, oh, yeah, like, yeah, somebody would just die if they fell off one of these.
Really just an awful piece of dialogue there to always be like, hey, and oh, by the way, here's the house, but also these cliffs. Watch out.
It's one of these things, by the way.
So with that said, we're at that point where clearly this movie is establishing that, hey, here's a new heavy for you guys to think about when you're renting vacation rentals.
But I'm wondering, what are they naming him?
They don't have a name for him.
Oh.
So, to your point, Dave Franco...
We should name him.
So, yeah.
So, I was about to say, I'm going to explain. Dave Franco said in an interview, this is supposed to be a spiritual successor to Strangers in Halloween. And so, for the most of the film, or most of the screenplay, they basically just called him The Shape or anything like that. So, would you just call him The Shape, or would you just... I don't know.
Like, in the back of my head, I'm like, do you call him the old man? Do you call him... the elderly? Do you call him?
Is he elderly?
Like, I call him like the homeowner. Something weird like that, where you're just like, you play into this vacation rental industry thing.
Yeah, I mean,
obviously he has money to like dispose. Well,
they show him going in and buying another home or
renting. He's a rental.
Is he renting or is he investor? Yeah.
Well, I guess we still don't know if he's the brother, right?
No, I don't think he is.
You don't think he's the brother.
I think he's just an investor.
Taylor's the
unsuspecting.
He's the Robin.
he's unsuspecting. He doesn't know.
He's the one you're supposed to like think like, oh, this. That guy.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think it's the brother. Like, I do think this is a guy that just, like, goes to vacation rentals, like, rents them on our various services, whether that's Vrbo. Let that sit in a second.
Slight.
Or Airbnb, and then installs cameras, and then comes back. You know, creates that master key and then comes back and just haunts these people because, you know what? That's fucking easy. That's really fucking easy.
Yeah, when you think about it, it is fucking easy.
So, to your point, and that's why I was just so mind blown. So, bring some aspects in the film where Charlie is mad and he's like, I'm not Charlie. Josh is mad. He's like, Charlie, come out. Come out. And you're like, well, they only had cameras in the shower heads. And then you realize... the guy's been watching him from jump. You see cameras in spots you would never think.
And in the shrubbery and everywhere.
And after he supposedly kills Mina, depending on how you look at it, he goes and picks him out of the plants, picks him out of certain areas of the water. He goes even to the light switchboard, and goes picks out a damn camera and the microphone out of that. And you're like, how? And you're just sitting there watching him do this. And like I said, when he goes and buys this new rental, I think he's buying rentals and just using them. He buys these rentals. He's making another makeshift key. Goes and puts another leg shift locked on there. And he's like, oh, yeah, I can unlock this deadbolt with just doing this. Yeah, cool. That's not a problem. And he's redoing everything all over again. And again, these kids don't know, but he has cameras planted everywhere watching them.
Yeah.
Like, one night, I'm just going to kill all of you and you don't know
it. Yeah, and I was trying to bring up to my girlfriend, like, yeah, I think that, like, that end sequence was, like, multiple properties.
Well, like, you think
they're trying to set up, like, Oh yeah, he's monitoring like multiple properties. Like he's everywhere.
Yes, I mean it's interesting. Like you would expect this kind of like forward thinking from like a Blumhouse, but like this is like I think it's IFC Midnight. Yeah, so I mean I think this is a really smart move. Like if I'm you know I'll put this question out there like. If there's a rental too, are you guys watching it?
I'm down.
Yep.
I'm down. Like if no Dave doubt. Franco and Swanberg comes back, so down.
Yeah.
So down.
I really think that this is a really fun avenue. Like, and
is he the renter?
Right. Well, like
I guess that is that what he is? Is that what he is? He's the renter?
He's the renter. We gotta pin that.
The renter. And like, yeah, like I'm here for it. And like you know what? Like in the Renter 3, like I want to see the renter like come into a place and be like, oh, fuck, this guy's already got cameras in this place.
Oh, shit. Like, what the hell? I need like a fucking Arlo's?
What? Like I want
the hell? You got Arlo's? The fucking Arlo's? You got rings? What the hell?
You got motion lights?
Like, oh, lights. Shit.
Like the renter's just in there taking a shower and it's like, oh, somebody's already videoing me taking a shower. Like, I want to see that. Like, I think it's, I don't think this is a great, amazing, it's not audacious debut from Dave Franco, but, like, what it is, like,
a great way to put yourself on the table.
Yeah, like, it's economical, it makes sense, and, like, it establishes this, like, this aura of like, okay, yeah, like this could it's a folklore of this guy, like, you know, trapping these people.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, no, this is what
with
he
vacation
does.
Rentals. Like, it's a great idea. Like, and I'm always looking for the next heavy, always looking anywhere I can find it. And it's really weird that it came from the younger
Dave
brother,
Franco.
The younger brother of a famous actor. Like, it's super weird, but I'm like, cool, Dave, like I'm ready for the Renter 5. Like, let's go.
At the end of the day, what star rating do you give it?
I gave it a 3.5.
A 3.5?
I'm a 3-star.
3-star? I gave it a 3.
Yeah.
The reason why I gave it a 3.5 is because for me, I love the character building and the character development that you got out of here. And again, like I said, with Dave. And that's why I watched it a second time, just to make sure, like, I'm not just bloating and just feeling like this was just that kind of film. I feel like Dave, like you said, Dave put you in these character situations, and you're like, would I have done different? I don't think I would have done different. I think I would have done the exact same scenario as they did. And I just was mind blown that for somebody, for their directorial debut, was not as ambitious, but took a trope and just swish it on its head and made it the way it did. And I really digged it for what it was. Mm-hmm. And I have it at, out of the 53 films I've seen so far, I have it at number 12 or number 11 right now, because unfortunately there's not that many great films that came out this year.
Yeah,
so
it is what it is.
But it was really damn good. Really damn good.
No, I mean, I think it's a movie that sits like really interesting next to like some of those, like, recent indie releases during quarantine, like Becky, The Beach House. And I think it stands next to him and says, I'm better.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that's why I was like, Dave, I'm waiting to see another film of this. Please keep reinventing the wheel or keep adding new things to the wheel to make it interesting. I'm so down. So ready for another one. So, any final thoughts of The Rental before we pass off?
No, like, definitely worth a rental, especially if you have someone else with you. Yes. Like, yeah,
I mean, it's
$6.
It's a blockbuster, like, rental.
It is what it is.
After watching it, I'm glad they didn't come out with the ridiculous like $19.99 to rent and own or rent or whatever. Like, the $6.99 price point or $5.99 I think on Amazon Prime is like a perfect price point for this movie. Like, we're not getting a lot of like new original content right now. And something like this, like, it's a fun, easy, and like, we didn't talk about it, but it's just well made.
Yes.
Like, nothing about this is like, oh, this is like cheap indie. Like, it's well made. Like, it's well put together.
For me, I'll rewatch it over and over again because it was that good. And mm-hmm. to your point, it's not cheaply made. It's, you could tell that it put thought and savor into this film.
And you got high caliber actors.
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. And that's why I say
movie stars. Movie stars.
Dan Stevens, Alison Brie, like, come on.
Should be movie stars.
Should be.
Sheila Van. Say her name.
Oh, holy Sheila shit. Van,
I want to see you in more. I need your agent to go give me more of you in bigger films. All right?
She was sexy.
Phenomenal. Smart. Absolutely smart. Phenomenal. Did not stand off her ground. Stood up to everybody in this film. Sheila, I need you in more films. I need to see you in more films because that was absolutely phenomenal.
Yes.
Absolutely. And Dave, if you're going to go like Jordan Peele and do horror, keep going.
We're here for it.
Absolutely. With that being said, that concludes the review of The Rental. Now, Johnny, I will come to you first. I will come to you second. But Brett, because thank you for coming here, and we really do appreciate you for coming and stopping by. And we really do appreciate it. So, where can the kids find you, and what have you been doing recently?
Dude, I've been doing nothing but quarantining. I'm gonna be honest. I love the Matinee Talk people. I've been rewatching Entourage. It put me in a weird headspace. I'm glad for new films like The Rental. And by all means, come find me on Letterboxd. I put together a lot of lists on there. I spend way too much time on there.
Interesting lists.
It's B Leipzig on there. That's about it, man.
Cool.
Thank you for that, Brett.
You can find me at Johnny the Wonder on Instagram and Twitter, and Johnny Boy Wonder for my Letterboxd reviews. And you, Julian?
You guys can find me on Instagram and Twitter at King Julian Owens. And as I said for the last couple of episodes, I will put my Letterboxd on here, but I need to be on Brett and Johnny's level. So when I get to their level, I will give you guys that Letterboxd. But again, Brett, thank you for joining us this episode for our 50th episode.
Yes.
Again,
guys, thank you for being here. Very fun, very fruitful, good episode.
So, yeah, again, thank you, guys. We love you. We appreciate you. Keep coming back so we can keep doing more of these, and we'll talk to you guys soon.